Well, our gospel today is a rather challenging one. You know, I could say a few words for a while here, but I'll try to make it quick. I grew up with a perfect Jesus. I mean, he did no wrong. Never, you know, fought with his brothers, bugged his sister, you know. Mrs. Crandall, his fourth grade teacher, never gave him the look, you know. Just didn't know. You know, I bet I'm not alone. How many of us grew up with a perfect Jesus? Well, that's going to be challenged a little bit today, as you will hear. You know, we were kind of pious heretics. Because we know, you know, the classic doctrine, Jesus is fully divine and fully human. Well, guess which one always won, you know? He's just maybe a quarter, a third human, or half at the best. So anyway, what happens, my second question is, what happens when some of this really interesting, we have this when Beth and Eric returned from sabbatical. Because what happens when someone really, really needs a sabbatical and doesn't get one? Well, if you're Jesus, you get really grouchy, rude, and offensive. I mean, you will wince when you hear this gospel. Jesus calls this a pleading, hurting woman a dog. So what are we going to do with this? So, of course, as you can imagine, commentators over the years have tried to explain that away in many ways. One is, well, he really needed a sabbatical, which he heard. The other, so he's really tired, not quite himself, you know. Another one is, he came to the people of Israel, you know, and this woman is a Syrophoenician Greek Gentile. He was still discovering, which is probably true. And another one is the Greek word for dog is not quite dog, it's pampered dog. As if that helps a lot. You know. What was another one? Oh, the Syrophoenicians were wealthy people, but there were a lot of Jews in that area, and the Jews, like Jesus, were dirt poor. So when the Syrophoenician women, I mean, there's this whole cultural gap here, and maybe, you know, that might play a role in it too. The other one is he's testing her devotion. Yeah, I don't know. But what happens? What happens, even though some of that might play a role, what happens if we don't try to explain away Jesus' shocking rudeness and just kind of take it as you'll hear it? Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. You should probably hear the reading of the gospel first. Let's stand. Jesus set out and went away to the region of Tyre and Sidon. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know he was there. Yet he could not escape notice. But a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit immediately heard about him, and she came and bowed down at his feet. Now the woman was a Gentile, a Syrophoenician origin. She begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter, and he said to her, "Let the children be fed first, for it's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." But she answered him, "Sir, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." And then he said to her, "For saying that, you may go. The demon has left your daughter." So she went home and found the child lying on the bed and the demon gone. And then he returned from the region of Tyre and went by way of Sidon toward the Sea of Galilee in the region of the Decapolis. And they brought to him a deaf man who had an impediment in his speech, and they begged him to lay his hands on him. He took him aside in private, away from the crowd, put his fingers into his ears, and he spat and touched his tongue. Then looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him, Ephphatha, that is, be opened. And immediately his ears were opened, his tongue was released, he spoke plainly. And then Jesus ordered them to tell no one. But the more he ordered them, the more zealously they proclaimed it. They were astounded beyond measure, saying, he's done everything well. He even makes the deaf to hear and the mute to speak. The gospel of the Lord. Praise. God's beloved people. As I mentioned just moments ago, I grew up with a perfect Jesus. Never messed up, never fell short, never had to say, I'm sorry. Now the problem with the perfect Jesus, of course, is that he doesn't exist. The Jesus who appears in the Gospels is not half incarnate. He is fully human as he is fully God, which is to say, he struggles, he snaps, he discovers, he grows, he falters, he learns, he fears, and he overcomes. He's real. He's approachable. And he is authentically one of us. The good news is not that we serve a shiny, inaccessible deity who floats, I don't know, 5 or 6 feet, you know, above the ground. But it is that Jesus shows us in real time, in real flesh, what it means to grow as a child of God. He embodies what it looks like to stretch into a deeper, truer, and fuller understanding of God's love. As Mark describes the scene, Jesus is far from home in the region of Tyre and Sidon. That's Greek country. That's Gentile country. He's sort of on a vacation, or if you will, a sabbatical. As far as we know, his friends aren't with him. And as Mark makes clear, he wants to be left alone. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know he was there. We don't know for sure why he's keeping to himself. But I think it's fair to assume that he was so downright bone tired that it led him to seek some restful solitude. After all, I mean, if you've been here and listening to Mark, after all, he's just recently been mocked and rejected by his own townspeople for days without respite. He's been fed the multitudes, healed the sick, liberated the demon-possessed, and confronted the Pharisees, all the while putting up with his continually clueless disciples. For all any number of understandable reasons, I mean, Jesus needs a break, a sabbatical, if you will. But that is not what he gets. Instead, he gets a Syrophoenician woman, an inconvenient outsider who barges into the house where he is staying, bows down at his feet, and begs him to cast a demon out of her daughter. And as you heard, what happens next is rather disturbing. Jesus looks down at this pleading Gentile woman ignores her suffering and dismisses her with words that make me wince. Let the children be, that's the people of Israel, let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. Are there ways around the awfulness of that moment? Like I mentioned, introducing the gospel, I mean, maybe. There may be. But I don't think they do justice to the power of this story. What makes the most sense to me is that the Jesus we encounter in this gospel reading is really human, truly human, and therefore a product of his time and place, shaped as we all are with a unconscious and conscious biases and prejudices and entitlements of his culture. And on top of that, he's the Messiah, a holy son still working out the meaning and the scope of that divine mission and vocation God has given him. He knows he's meant to share the good news. But can it be? Can it be that Jesus needs to be opened to how radically good that good news is? So the Syrophoenician woman teaches him, turning his slur right back at the man who insults her. She replies, "Sir, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." It's the perfect response, because it cuts to the very heart of Jesus' boundary-breaking, taboo-busting, division-destroying ministry of table fellowship. After all, he is the Messiah who eats with tax collectors and prostitutes. He's the rabbi who breaks bread with sinners. His disciples, remember last week, are the ones who earn the Pharisees' contempt for eating with unwashed hands. The table is where Jesus shows the world who God is. And so the table is precisely where this Greek, this Syrophoenician, this outsider, this Gentile, the outcast, the other, calls him out. As Debbie Thomas says so well, commenting on this text, it is as if she says, "Lord, where is my good news? Where's my place at the table? When will the goodness be good enough for me and my daughter? If you are who you say you are, how can you be content while anyone goes hungry around your table? I know you've got good news, so let it come to fruition. Look harder, push further, see better. Believe that there's enough good news to go around. Expand the circle, dissolve the boundaries, widen the table. Preach your good news to me." And here's the best part of letting that perfect Jesus image go and letting this human, the real Jesus, win our hearts instead. Jesus accepts the instruction of the woman who challenges him. He allows her, this one, so different from him, ethnically, religiously, generally, he allows her to school him in his own gospel. to break the barrier of his prejudice, to teach him compassion. Jesus, who never loses an argument in the whole Bible, never loses an argument except this one, as he concedes the argument to this audacious female foreigner. Because of your teaching, he says, the demon has left your daughter. Jesus changes. He moves from prejudice to inclusion. He allows himself to be humbled, rearranged, and remade. Barbara Brown Taylor describes the moment this way. You can almost hear the huge wheel of history turning as Jesus comes to a new understanding of who he is and what he has been called to do. The Syrophoenician woman's faith and persistence teach him that God's purpose for him is bigger than he imagined, and that there's enough of him to go around. Then can't you almost hear Jesus laughing to himself as he goes from this encounter to the healing of a deaf man in that same region, also a Gentile? Placing his fingers in the man's ears, Jesus looks to heaven, sighs, and says, "Be opened." He sighs. Is it? Do you think it's Jesus sharing the joke with God? As in, "Okay, Abba, I get it. Listen, learn, be opened, hear you. I'm working on it." What would it be like to follow in the footsteps of a Jesus who listens to the urgent challenges of one so different from himself, who humbles himself long enough to learn what only a vulnerable outsider can teach? What would it be like to stop limiting who we will be for other people and who we will let them be for us? What would it be like to insist on good news for people who don't look, speak, act, or even worship like we do? Be opened. It's the word for the day. Be opened to the truth that God isn't finished with us, with you, yet either. Be open to the wisdom of people much different from us. Be open to the voice of God speaking an unexpected gospel from an unexpected place. Be open to the widening of the table. Be open to the good news that stretches our capacity for love and grace and peace and all that good stuff. Wow. It makes my heart sing. Amen.